Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC, and we continue our conversation about what we see on our screens with a controversy that's been unspooling over at YouTube. I'm going to paint the broad strokes, and my guest will fill in. On May 30th, a journalist who is Latinx and gay posted a thread on Twitter about attacks on his ethnicity and sexual orientation by a YouTuber, a self-described conservative commentator comic, who is also has about 4 million YouTube subscribers, I should say. Now, this journalist's post, these tweets went viral. And on Tuesday, June 4th, YouTube responded stating that, quote, while we found language that was clearly hurtful, the videos as posted don't violate our policies. And that, quote, opinions can be deeply offensive, but if they don't violate our policies, they remain on our site. Well, YouTube's sort of elastic, neither here nor there policy didn't go over that well. The next day, YouTube announced plans to take down thousands of extremist videos and channels. So here to fill in all the details and walk us through YouTube's changing policies is Paris Martineau, a staff writer at Wired who covers social media manipulation and online extremism and internet culture. She recently wrote the article, YouTube is banning extremist videos. Will it work? So Paris, for people who don't know the names of the folks in this story, let's start there. Carlos Maza. Who is Carlos Maza and what did he do?
So Carlos Maza is a Latinx journalist with Vox. He is a member of the LGBTQ community. And so he tweeted out last week that he had been experiencing pretty intense homophobic harassment, he said, at the hands of a prominent far-right YouTuber, Steven Crowder, who's a pundit kind of on YouTube. And he had a very lengthy Twitter thread that went viral, kind of pointing to the specific harassment and calling on YouTube to do something about it. YouTube then, in replies, kind of doubled down its position to not do anything. And then, coincidentally, the next day happened to announce this wide sweeping policy that, among other things, was going to ban videos that promote the superiority of one group over another, to discriminate or attack someone based on, let's say, a person's age, gender, race, religion, or sexual orientation. Meanwhile, here it was defending a move where someone was being attacked on their sexual orientation, and they said that was completely fine.
So what Carlos Maza did is he pieced together a montage. Does that sound right? Of all the different video clips, what kind of things was Steven Crowder saying about him?
So there was the use of a lot of different very homophobic slurs, direct attacks.
For stereotypical, there was one where he was stereotypically lisping, just being really sort of
gross. He called him a little queer, lispy queer, the gay Vox sprite, that sort of thing. Direct attacks kind of based on his sexual orientation, mm-hmm. and direct harassment. Yet YouTube determined that while these attacks were offensive, they didn't violate its policies on harassment.
Are YouTube's policies before this all happened, were they about harassment, were they clear at all?
Clear is a relative term. Even in cases where YouTube has clear policies, its enforcement is another issue entirely. Oftentimes, YouTube does not act until something kind of creates critical mass or enough people have reported it. One, due mm-hmm. to the fact that scale exists, but two, due to the fact that moderation is a complicated task. And it like many tech companies, YouTube isn't very into or interested in actively policing and editing the videos on its site. Yet this blew up to large proportions either way.
What do you, as someone who studies this and writes about this, why do you think they shifted their position, even though the shift is sort of why do you think they shifted their position? Let's just stop there.
Yeah, YouTube's announcement follows years of criticism that the platform's kind of laissez-faire approach to content moderation has allowed YouTube to become a haven for extremists, media manipulators, and all sorts of generally bad people. Facebook has kind of done something similar in the past, weeks in regards to banning a number of high-profile extremists and figures. YouTube seems as if it was maybe designed to be a broader step towards that, yet it's really it's too soon to say whether this is going to be effective, as the company didn't specify how it plans to proactively identify any offending videos, enforce the new rules at all, or punish offenders, which is particularly concerning given that YouTube has a pretty inconsistent track record when it comes to enforcing its existing community guidelines.
Laissez-faire. That was the perfect example of what I was trying to get my mouth around. So is this new policy, do you consider, is it an expansion? Is it a change in policy? What's your view of it?
I guess if you're taking it on its face value, it's an expansion onto YouTube's current guidelines around hate. Like these new community guidelines, they ban videos kind of in that specific category that promote superiority, but they also, YouTube said specifically, apply to all videos that, let's say, espouse or glorify Nazi ideology, or videos that promote conspiracy theories like that 9/11 didn't happen, or that the Holocaust denial, or those sort of crisis mm-hmm. actor claims that pop up in the wake of mass shootings. As to whether any of this is actually going to happen, we will see as YouTube actually tries to apply it.
So where does the issue of demonetization come in?
Yeah, so the Maza example is actually a really good one. So YouTube said originally, before it released these new policies, we're not going to take any action. Then afterwards it said, okay, we're going to demonetize Steven Crowder. And demonetization, so the reason why these people get so big on YouTube is because you can run ads on YouTube and make money, and YouTube makes money. When YouTube says demonetizes, that means it's taking the ads away, effectively kind of cutting off this main revenue stream. So YouTube said that it was going to demonetize Crowder because of the harassment in his speech. And then, curiously, a couple of hours later, tweeted again saying, oh, we're not demonetizing because of the harassment in the videos. We're demonetizing him only because he links to a shop where he is selling a T-shirt. And if you remove those links, then he could run ads again. So in that case, it was not even related to the policies at all. But supposedly, this is something they're going to do in other cases of harassment in the future.
My guest is Paris Martineau, staff writer at Wired. Her piece is YouTube is banning extremist videos. Will it work? So it's interesting, and you may not know the answer to this, but when we say YouTube is doing, YouTube is deciding, who is the bottom line? Is it the CEO? Is it the head of standards and practices, if there is such a thing? Is it Google or Alphabet?
Well, I mean, it's a great question, because I think that's my least favorite things. We say YouTube is because it's much shorter, but really what we're saying is the mass of people inside of YouTube that work on these things are doing this. And YouTube is, of course, owned by Google, which is owned by Alphabet. It's part of this large content ecosystem, and that's one reason why I'm hesitant, I guess, to conflate the Maza situation with mm-hmm. these policies, because this was definitely something people were working on long before this case happened.
Interesting.
But I think it is a good, because I mean, obviously, content moderation policies aren't born in a day, but it's a good example of the fact that this happened to happen at the exact same time, and yet YouTube still wasn't really prepared to handle it in any concise way.
It's so interesting. Why wouldn't they be prepared to handle it?
It's a great question, one that I've been asking my coworker. I was just talking about this maybe an hour ago with a coworker. It's mind-boggling to me personally that these giant tech companies, they have faced criticism for this for years, that they don't have these content moderation policies, and they've always been silent on it. Why wouldn't they be silent? If they need 6 months more to figure it out and hammer out the details to make sure it's perfect when they roll it out, why wouldn't they just take 6 months more? Everyone would still assume that they are just keeping their same position as before. It seems so odd that you'd roll out a policy like this and not prepare for all the worst case scenarios and not prepare to enforce it entirely from the get-go.
They are taking some sort of action toward their algorithms.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to make a difference with what the videos you like suggest you will also like. Can you explain to me why this is important and why this change could actually make somewhat of a difference?
Yeah, so one of the biggest changes that's happened kind of in YouTube recently was in 2012. So if you're on YouTube and watching videos, the main way users kind of get into new things is from YouTube's recommendation algorithm, which shows you things that you'd also like. Before 2012, it was mostly, it'll show you similar stuff. In 2012, though, they changed it to show you things that may be similar, but in the sense that it's something that they think a person like you would like, not a video that is similar to the video you were watching before. And this kind of led to a huge boom in increasingly kind of polarizing content. Let's say if you liked some very normal kind of far, like right-wing policy video, maybe it would show you something farther and farther right, and same with the left. But YouTube has announced yesterday that they are going to try and tamp down on that in relation to, let's say, like conspiracy theorist content. There, instead of showing you more and more conspiracy theorist content, they say they're going to try and show you authoritative sources on certain hot button issues. And if that actually happens, it would hopefully stop this kind of from spiraling out of control and have people falling down rabbit holes.
There's been so much outside pressure on YouTube and on a lot of these platforms to do some self-policing, to do some, have some editorial control. What about internally? The LGBTQ employees who are at YouTube and Google can't be happy about these policies.
Yeah. So The Verge actually recently reported that internally employees have petitioned YouTube recently to strip its social channels of Pride branding. They see it as kind of a hypocritical co-opting of this community and symbol. Meanwhile, you've had this high-profile kind of fallout and sparring with the people inside the community. Additionally, I mean, over the last 2 years, many top LGBTQ creators on YouTube have alleged that their videos have been restricted or demonetized ostensibly for featuring the words gay, lesbian, or bisexual, even when they weren't about specifically sexual content. And YouTube has largely denied this, that they were demonetized or restricted, but part of the issue rests that it's hard to tell what is true. When it comes to content moderation, YouTube, like many social media sites, is largely a black box, and we're only seeing the effects, not what's actually happening behind it.
In our last minute, is there anyone supporting Steven Crowder and his point of view?
He has thousands, millions of supporters, and they are all behind him, as well as there is a large, I'd say, crowd of people who see any attempt to crack down on content on YouTube as an attack on free speech, which is its own can of worms entirely. But there are a lot of people who are in support of a free and open YouTube, regardless of what that means.
The name of the piece is YouTube is Banning Extremist Videos. Will it work? Paris Mertner is a staff writer at Wired. Paris, thank you so much for coming in and walking us through this.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. You know what? Meet me back here next time.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.